So I'd like to thank them for allowing us to speak today and to be on this really esteemed panel of colleagues. I spend most of my professional life trying to convince people that sexually transmitted infections are actually a pediatric disease, but I think the CDC has actually been clear in that we need to have appropriate interventions for patients, that they should be at their developmental level, and that we should be careful and non-judgmental and thorough in our approach to counseling them. So PID is a common reproductive health problem that's associated with both age and racial ethnic health disparities. The potential long-term sequelae associated with PID include ectopic pregnancy, tubal infertility, and chronic pelvic pain. Believe it or not, adolescents actually really value their future fertility. Almost 90% of girls and boys say that it is somewhat or very important to them to be a parent in the future. We've also underestimated the impact of the quality of life impacts of chronic pelvic pain, I think, on young women. The care of the adolescent patient has shifted from inpatient to outpatient settings, and so interventions designed to really improve adherence are essential for fertility preservation in affected patients, and no previous research has really explored alternative interventions designed to meet this need in public health. I think we also have to understand the shift in our approach to PID. In 2002, we had the first publications coming out of the PEACE trial at the University of Pittsburgh, and then we had subsequent cost-effective analysis where Smith stated that it would never be cost-effective to ever admit an adolescent or any woman for mild to moderate PID. And the guidelines really changed after that, and so really considering how we might have been caring for adolescents in children's centers. Adolescents and young adults are often managing their care alone. Their medication adherence is low. Their risk reduction needs are high. They're at risk for recurrent disease, and their future fertility is at risk. I also worry sometimes that we may have misinterpreted as a public health community the data in the trial. It's efficacy data, mostly focused on the delivery of where antibiotics were delivered. There was no use of hospitalization for behavioral intervention, which is what many children's hospitals were doing at the time. And the mean age actually of the adolescent subgroup less than 19 was around 18 plus or minus 1. So as it can speak to early and middle adolescence, it's really quite limited. But then when you looked at all of the women, 21%, this is adolescents and adults, 21% had recurrent PID, 19% had infertility, and 43% of those women had chronic pelvic pain. And yet this is the data that we use to sort of say we're going to back off on care because there weren't differences between the groups, instead of saying we need to come up with something different because hospitalization is not working for them. I understand that hospitalization is expensive. We did a study looking at the direct cost of hospitalizing people at our institution. We had to include the emergency department because ambulatory care pretty much consisted of ED care. Most patients were seen in the emergency room, but it's about $7,500 more to admit a patient to the inpatient unit than to see them in the outpatient setting. But another reason that young people are vulnerable is because of provider adherence to the CDC guidelines. So we did a local data, and we found that 40% of patients did not receive care according to the CDC guidelines. But when we look at national data, so Charlotte and her group and Monica Goyle and her group and our team actually looked at it, and about a third of women nationwide actually received adequate care according to the CDC guidelines for management of PID. We did demonstrate in our research locally that we could change that, and so we could get it up to 91% in our institution with really a lot of hand-holding and resources given to providers at the time of diagnosis. But that really means that of the 200,000 adolescents who have PID in the United States every year, only 60,000 girls would get the care that they're supposed to get according to the CDC guidelines. Clinicians also struggle with adolescent disposition. We did a national survey asking physicians when they would, and nurse practitioners, when they would admit a patient to the hospital. And people do a great job with the CDC guidelines, but as those adolescent things start to come into the picture, patients develop any delay, their parents don't know, they have social issues, all the things that make caring for adolescents fun, it started to slowly decline. We've also done brief behavioral interventions to try to mobilize care around the adolescent. I'll just show you a brief clip of this. I'm trying to stay on time.
PID is a common medical problem. It's my job to take care of you as my patient and make sure that you have all the information that you need to take care of yourself. About 1 million women in the United States have PID every year. Some of those patients feel bad about themselves when they get it, but you cannot let that stop you from taking care of yourself.
Besides, I knew I needed to do this for me and my own health. All of this is to say that PID is a common condition.
But it is important for young women like us to take care of ourselves now to protect our reproductive future.
When I think about it, taking care of myself wasn't that hard.
There are only a few things you have to remember.
You have to take the medicine for an entire 14 days with a huge glass of water.
Come back to the follow-up appointment within 72 hours
so that they can change your plan if you're not getting better.
Most women don't get hospitalized, but some women need to get antibiotics in the hospital.
Don't have sex while you're being treated, so your body has a chance to heal. And
lastly, you have to tell your partner so that he can be treated while you're being treated.
If you have sex with him before he's treated, then that infection that's causing your pain and symptoms can come back again.
If you are important to him, then he'll do it, right?
Right.
So true to public health form, if he cares about it, he's going to do it, right?
Right?
Right. And so girls who watched this video were 3 times more likely to get their partners notified and treated than girls who didn't. But there are other behaviors. You have to abstain from sex. You have to take all the medicine. You have to come back in 72 hours. And girls really couldn't do that, even though they had high self-efficacy at baseline for doing so. So I think that we need to have a strategic approach to management of PID in the United States. And I think we need something that's, you know, outpatient treatment right now. I treated every girl in our institution for a year, $3 per person, right? So $300, I can give everybody doxycycline. And that's super cheap. And we're never going to be able to be better than that. A big randomized trial is very expensive, but we need something that is more cost effective than either of those two. And I thought, well, we could improve meds. Maybe we could get doxycycline and flagyl patches, and that would delay release over 14 days. I should come up with that. Or maybe a vaccine would do it. We could just stop chlamydia in its path. But the reality was that those things are far off from being developed. But community health nursing has been a strategy to use. It's worked well for teen pregnancy as well as asthma with adolescents in the community. And so that's what our target was. And so we actually did a pilot study because people did not believe that we could get into people's homes. And we had already been going into people's homes to do DIS follow-ups. But we demonstrated that a nurse could get into the home and that parents were very supportive of those strategies. We also did a contingent valuation study to try to estimate consumer preferences or their numerical values, the utilities for certain types of care. We actually showed that adolescents actually perceived lower health-related quality of life for typical scenarios associated with PID than adults. I'm only showing the parents here, but that's true for clinicians. Clinicians also underestimate the quality of life impact. But we also showed that in an egocentric stage of life, that adolescents, if you give them 50 years left to live, that they're willing to give up 1 to 2 years of their lives not to have the complications associated with pelvic inflammatory disease. We also asked people what they are willing to pay, because it's all about money now. And the reality is that adolescents and parents were actually willing to pay a larger copay than physicians actually predicted. They were willing to pay about $18.50 more to actually have a physician do the visit, but they were also willing to pay a significant amount more to actually have a community health nurse come to their home. What's interesting is that I started this at a $5 copay because that was the cost of a tank of gas when we started this study. And parents were willing to pay almost $60 to have a community health nurse come to their home to prevent their daughter from having adverse outcomes. We also discovered that adolescents are wired and online, and so we tried to figure out if we could add a technology component to that. We actually worked with girls who were on Depo-Provera as our sample because it takes a long time to collect PID patients over time. And we found that cell phone technology in urban low-income adolescents is highly feasible. 95% of them have cell phones, 92% of them have unlimited text messaging, 91% of them enrolled in the trial. I enrolled 100 girls in 3 months in a study. 100% of them were satisfied with receiving sexual health messages, and the bonus was that 64% of them felt that getting messages from us made them feel more connected to our clinic. So this is the study that we've designed, and we're actually recruiting people for this study. It has text message reminders for medication adherence, appointments, and adherence support. So if you only took one dose today, we give you a positive message to take another one later. The community health nursing visits are actually good. She does the 72-hour visit out in the home for them and does the sister-to-sister teen intervention developed by Jamont and colleagues at the University of Pennsylvania. Respect yourself, protect yourself, because we are worth it. And we're hoping that we can actually change their attitudes, beliefs, and outcome expectations, remove the barriers associated with taking good care of themselves, and then ultimately we can reduce STI positivity at 90 days in the short term. This is just some preliminary data from our study so far. You can see that we actually have done a nice job in reducing gonorrhea and chlamydia, which were our original targets with the NIH. 30% reduction in gonorrhea and chlamydia, 62% when we control for medication adherence. What I noticed, and I was at the Trichomonas vaginalis and the mycoplasma talks this morning, is that I think we've underestimated the role that these other organisms play in maintaining the inflammatory response for young women who have pelvic inflammatory disease. And I think we have to be able to clear all of their infections in order for them to have sort of healthy reproductive health in the future. So what's exciting about our work is I think it captures the innovation of person-based communication using technology and community health nursing. We have the power to improve vulnerable patients to engage in their health care and reshape the PID management. We have the millennial generation working on this project to help the next generation. We have young people who are really engaged in developing innovative cell phone platforms and recruiting patients in the field. We actually have new data regarding the biological milieu of PID in urban women in the United States. And while people may not want a public health platform or public health program for that based on the debates, the reality is it's real in our urban environments. And we also can we want to create developmentally appropriate and cost-effective strategies to really protect the reproductive future for adolescent girls and young women. I'd like to thank all the people that participated in these projects and have helped move it along. I'm particularly grateful for our tech end team. We have amazing people who actually have 92% maintenance rate of these girls who are very hard to follow at 3 months, and so I'm really grateful to have such a wonderful team. Thank you so much.
Thank you.